for 1 to 8, it's basically your 3 hours, and then after that, you either go into high school for professional training, or you would go leave school and go into your apprenticeship
program. Well, don't forget, now, there's something that at the end of grade 8, the youngster in those days could go into the apprentice system in business and in industry, particularly. Mm-hmm. Now, the apprentice system was had all sorts of faults, but at least that was one way of getting a training other than going to high school. And I know some very wealthy people today that went that track.
That's right.
They didn't go to university at all. Mm-hmm. And yet, on the other hand, if you went through high school, you usually ended up at UBC or at the normal school. Now, normal school was where the elementary teachers were taught for 1 year. And UBC, you could go into the various professions. But even UBC in those days, there was no law. Well, there was no medicine.
No dentistry.
No dentistry, no. Very little psychology, a bit. But you see, it was quite limited too. And there was no Simon Fraser.
No, UBC was largely scholastic in the terms of
That's right.
Greek, Latin, French, and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I left Burnaby South in 26, there were 40 of us in the class. And of that 40, I think it was 27 went to UBC. And of the 27, almost all became teachers.
Was there an expansion at the university level, do you know, in the 30s, similar to...
No. Not a great... No, they were limited. Their budgets
Their expansion
were
came
cut.
After the war.
Yes. Actually, their expansion largely came... We're jumping a bit, but their expansion came when all the fellows came back and got grants to go to UBC.
And they had to expand.
And then they had to expand, and they had to give them something. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So there was some change in the... The school system, the organization of it.
Not a great deal.
There was
it's wrong to think of this as something dramatic, really.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't dramatic at all. It was a very gradual thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The general philosophy of the school system didn't change much in the 30s. I don't think
nothing changed. You still kept in the same old routine, same old rut. No, there were no changes at all. You could practically use your notebook for the day year before for this year, and it fit in beautifully. So
use last year's exam.
Oh yes, and we did.
And you taught to it. And remember, there was no such thing as recommendation. Every student that left grade 12 had to write a department exam, unless you were taking the commercial course. That's right. Mm-hmm. You've got to be corrected on that. But the commercial course was a small one and didn't affect too many people. But anybody that was going on the matric program, as they called it, had to write the exam, and you wrote the whole works, whether you were a first-class student or not. It didn't matter.
Well, that wasn't true of the entrance. They used a recommendation system much earlier.
Yeah, it was.
On the entrance into high school, there were recommendations.
You were allowed to recommend up to about 60% of your class. The rest were expected to write, and some youngsters were expected to pass to justify your recommendations.
That's right.
What? How would depression affect the school? Just the running of the school day to day. Your supplies, your teacher salaries.
It didn't affect materially, except you were horribly short of teaching materials. Mm-hmm. Maps were scarce as they could be. For an example, in geography, you had difficulty getting a globe. When it came to art, if they call it art, you got a piece of paper 9x12, which you very carefully cut into 4 pieces and gave each youngster a little tiny bit. And this was the amount of paper that was available. There were some exercise books available, always were. I don't know why exercise books were picked on like that, but you always got exercise books given to you all the years of the depression.
I think the government grant had something to do with that. But as Mr. Davies says, that the supplies were pitiful.
Well, you know, for a teacher to get hold of a box of chalk was quite an achievement. They get the box of chalks and hide it in case somebody else found that they had a box of chalk. ink was scarce, you got a certain number of bottles of ink. Mm. And that was enough to do all year, or should be. In those days, it was real ink, you know. Every youngster had an inkwell on the desk. And they used the pen with a nib.
Were the textbooks supplied at that time?
No.
No.
Yeah, youngsters had to buy their textbooks.
They bought their own.
They were minimal.
Mm-hmm. You didn't... you see, there's another thing. The programs changed so little that... Sally gave her, when she finished school, she gave her books to Johnny. And Johnny gave his to Ruthie. You see, this is the idea. So those books went right through the family.
That's right. Once you bought a book.
Because the material didn't change, so the books were still used.
Right.
Gamble's History of Canada was used for years and years and years.
I was thinking in terms of such things as getting furnaces fixed. That was a major proposition. I mean, half the time one school I was in, half the time the place was cold because it cost too much to fix the furnace. And cordwood supplies in some schools were was very poor. This went on for quite a while.
I believe in reading that about some of the relief works that were done, one of them was cutting the cordwood. And they cut it all to the wrong lengths the first time around, and they ended up having to cut it again.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So as a proposition to give these men work, and they had to cut it twice over, it ended up costing more. They should have just bought the stuff commercially.
Yeah, that could happen.
Well, of course, the purpose was to give them work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an excuse to give them money.
Right. As far as clothes, dress, and that sort of thing, no, I haven't any.
I have no recollection.
No recollections of youngsters not being reasonably clothed.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, I can remember that I couldn't afford more than a very cheap suit once every 3-4 years. That's about it. And the shoes. Oh, the shoes wore out. That's interesting. I think the shoes. Most of the schools had oil floors.
That's right.
Now, the reasoning behind that was that if the floors weren't oiled, they would get dusty, and the dust would come up in large clumps. And it was too expensive to finish a floor like we would finish them today. So they put oil on them. Now, that oil got in your shoes, and after walking around teaching for some time, all of a sudden, I remember this, and one morning I went to put my shoes on, and my foot went right through the shoe, because it wears right up there, right along the top of the sole. And those blame things, the oil would get into your shoe to the extent that you walk in on somebody's carpet, and immediately there'd be a blob of oil. The oil floors.
In addition to that, it's rather interesting. We were using composite soles when we got our shoes repaired. It's not leather. It made of some sort of a rubber composite, neoprene, they call it. And the effect upon the oil on the neoprene soil was to cause the lower portion to expand. And the first thing you know, your toes are turning up like that, and you go along with your shoes.
Right.
Your toes turning up.
It sounds like some one of the Sherlock Holmes novels. He'd be sitting in the room, and immediately that you walked in upon his rug, he would know, a teacher.
He could tell. Certainly he could. Yeah,
it rotted your socks, too. But mind you, it kept your corns down.
Well, yes, and it kept the dust down in the school.
They said it was more sanitary, but you had an awful job getting the janitor to wash it thoroughly.
Yes, that's right.
They would wash it, but they wouldn't clean it up properly. No scrubbing machines or anything of that nature, you know. No. They just simply take a broom,
everything was done by
some soap and water, and swish it around a bit.